Now, maths and music come together.
We met probably a couple of years ago when I was working on a piece called Taurus Concerto for Orchestra.
This is your donut piece, right?
This is my donut piece for the BBC Proms last year.
Okay.
And we really connected donut-wise.
Tell us what a Taurus is.
It is my favourite shape of all time, so that was why we immediately connected. So it is the shape of a Homer Simpson donut. It's a shape with a hole in the middle, and it's actually a very 20th century shape in a way, because it's through this shape that we've discovered quite a lot of really fascinating mathematics. The idea of topology, kind of bendy geometry. So if you think of something like the London Underground map, it's not a geometric map of the underground. It shows the way the thing is connected together.
This is Marcus de Sotoy, mathematician, and Emily Howard, composer. After meeting at the Proms last year, they've set up a research project together at the Royal Northern College of Music called PRISM, a centre for practice and research in science and music, creating new collaborations between the two disciplines, including one between Marcus and Emily, based on mathematical proof and the string quartets of Haydn. We'll get to that in a moment.
So what I was really excited was to see how Emily had somehow used music to travel around this geometric shape, which I've been fascinated in as a research mathematician for years. But I listen to a lot of music when I'm doing my mathematics, so there's always been a connection there for me.
I studied mathematics and loved mathematics all the way through. I studied it for degree level as well. And I think, for me, it's about truth. I think the processes that I use are often derived from using mathematical processes that I've learnt. But there's something about translating them into music that I just love. Ideas from pure mathematics really appeal to me. There's something perfect about them, and it's the translation into sound that I think is my creative process, because during that translation, something happens. If you like, they become applied in the musical world. That's an applied world. It's not perfect. There are limitations. But the imperfections, perhaps, you know, that's perhaps what's so exciting about it.
There's so much talk about this maths-music connection, you know, harmony being related to whole number ratios, rhythm giving rise to things like the Fibonacci numbers. But I think it goes so much deeper than that. And you're already seeing this with a lot of composers, the structural ideas, for example, Messiaen using prime numbers in the quartet for the end of time. But for me, when I'm making mathematics, I'm telling a story using mathematical ideas. And I take my reader, my listener, on an intellectual journey where I start with some ideas that they're happy with, and I gradually transform those. Each logical step seems to make perfect sense, but by the end, I've got them to somewhere completely new. Now, for me, that's how I listen to a piece of music. So I've always felt that mathematical proof actually has a lot in common with constructing a piece of music. And I wanted to try this out on somebody who appreciated both of these. And Emily just got the kind of challenge.
Marcus came to me with this, would you like to work on a piece about proof with me? That was the idea, wasn't it? You wanted to talk about the music.
Yeah, I wanted to see whether proof had the kind of musical quality that I felt it had, and whether that was something that Emily as a composer might respond to.
So tell me what proof is, because for many people who read detective novels but don't know about mathematics, proof is just evidence that somebody did it. What is proof in a mathematical context?
Well, that's not a bad definition, actually. What proof is, you know, might want to prove, for example, that there are infinitely many prime numbers, these indivisible numbers. So I have to give you a logical argument from things you totally accept as blindingly obvious. I will take you on this journey of logical deduction until I arrive at a place where you say, oh, right, so that means there are infinitely many primes. In the end, you arrive somewhere completely new.
So was your question to Emily, does music work in that same way as well? Or was your question to her, what if I put this notion of mathematical proof to you, what would you come up with as a composer?
Well, it turned out to be the latter, actually. So I sat down with Emily and we went through several different sorts of proofs. So we have this wonderful thing called proof by contradiction. So if you want to prove something, you could suppose the opposite, go through a logical deduction, get a contradiction, and then you know that your assumption was false. And so you've actually proved the thing you were trying to prove is true. So I offered this over as a challenge. OK, Emily, what would proof by contradiction sound like in a piece of music?
And what did it end up sounding like?
Well, the first thing was that I thought to myself, OK, I'm going to approach writing music as though I'm solving a mathematical proof. And what I thought was, OK, I've got to start with something axiomatic.
What do you mean by that?
So an axiom are those mathematical statements that we write down which we believe are just truths about the universe. For example, if I add 3 plus 4, that's going to be the same as if I add 4 plus 3.
OK, so you begin with a musical statement which is axiomatic. So this is like a subject,
yeah,
a melody or a theme or an idea.
And for me, because I was writing for the Piatti String Quartet, it made sense to take something from the string quartet world, and I took Haydn Opus 1, number 1. You know, Haydn made his own journey through the proof, and you get to the end of the first movement. So I was thinking about this, and the step that I took was to think, OK, suppose the opposite is true. So I've got the end of this Haydn, just a couple of bars of Haydn. Well, that's very creative. I mean, composers need to have things to do and to think about what could be the opposite of this Haydn.
Oh, I see. So you mean you're saying, so what if the opposite of Haydn were true?
Yes.
What is the opposite of Haydn?
Well, what is interesting is that for any composer, surely that might be different. But the fact is, asking the question helps you to go somewhere that you haven't been before.
So is this the kind of thing that you as a composer use? I mean, I know you don't think in terms of mathematical proof every time you write a piece of music, but having gone through this process of writing with this sort of mathematical filter, I suppose, in front of your creative process, have you started recognising things about the way in which you actually write anyway?
Yes.
That turns out to be somehow mathematical at its heart?
Absolutely. Composers like to have a set of tricks. This is in my toolkit now, to suppose the opposite in certain circumstances. And because I did it so rigorously, actually, in this case. Now, you know, I'm writing an opera, which is a much larger scale work, but you can't just sit down and write an opera just straight through. You need to have some kind of toolkit. And of course, using this, suppose the opposite in certain circumstances, I mean, it's really helpful.
But I think this works both ways, you see. I think people often get worried about this maths-music connection, that we're just trying to take the emotion out of music and make it all very logical. And actually, I would like to try and see it the other way around, that mathematics has quite an emotional quality to it. I'm not just proving, you know, every true statement about numbers and geometry. I'm making choices, just as a composer does, to go in interesting directions, find surprising connections between things. So there are a lot of choices involved in the mathematics I make, which I think are driven by aesthetics which are very similar to that which drives a composer. Sometimes composers actually discover new things that I haven't even thought about as a mathematician. So Xenakis wrote a piece, Nomos Alpha, for solo cello. It's about the symmetries of a cube, which I've spent a lot of time exploring as a mathematician. But what I hadn't thought of doing was the little trick that he plays in that, which is to see if he does some combinations of rotations of the cube, if he just keeps on combining them, actually very similar to the Fibonacci numbers, what's the kind of longest cycle he can get before he gets back to the beginning? And Nomos Alpha kind of solves that. Now, that's begun a journey for me, looking at other symmetrical shapes and thinking about the same sort of structure, which I've never thought about before, but it was the question that was asked by a composer saying, oh, look, I've discovered something quite interesting about this structure, which has set me off on my own mathematical journey.
Marcus de Sotoy and Emily Howard. Check out their PRISM Research Centre on the Royal Northern College of Music's website. They've got a PRISM launch event at the Manchester Science Festival on Tuesday. And if you took part in some of our music science audience experiments in last week's Music Matters at Wellcome Collection and want to do more of that kind of thing, PRISM have some experiments you can sign up for too, which they're developing with the Oxford E Research Centre. Go on, be a lab rat for music.